Now we finish the meditation time. It's the time to give this evening's Dhamma talk. And again, because I haven't got a clue what I'm going to speak when I come here. Just after coming here, I went to the toilet, the source of many an inspiration. And there I thought, I know what I'm going to talk about this evening. And it's going to be like how to deal with criticism. Because each one of us, from time to time, gets criticized, blasted, torn apart, fragmented, just by the harsh words of another person. They may not be harsh words, even simple words. And sometimes we get criticized. And why is it that too often we don't know how to deal with criticism? And because of that, not only do we encourage more criticism in the world, but also we suffer immensely. Sometimes that words can be so biting, and they can hurt us so deeply. And because the whole point of Buddhism is to lessen the suffering in the world. And by suffering in the world, I mean suffering within you, because the suffering doesn't live in the bricks or in the trees or in the animals, they live in you. So here, we're lessening the suffering of humankind by having some wise attitudes drawn from the history and the philosophy of Buddhism, drawn from the wisdom which comes from a peaceful mind on how to deal with criticism in life. And the reason this came up, because some of you, hopefully, might have seen on Wednesday I had a letter to the West Australian printed in a newspaper, because there was an article about a week ago about the Dalai Lama criticizing gay lifestyles, even saying things like, he's reported to have said that if you're a gay, you can't be a Buddhist. And I thought, that's wrong, he can't say that. So I wrote a nice little article, quite a hard article, because you have to write a hard article, otherwise it doesn't get printed. If you're all sort of soft and nice, then nobody wants to publish that. So it was a bit of a cutting article, but I still got a bit of flack from that on the internet. But it said that, you know, how do we deal with criticism? Are we supposed to be, especially in Buddhism, just so respectful of your monks and teachers, you don't even criticize them at all? And you can see the danger in that when we have what we call in religion the guru tradition, where the guru is so high that whatever they do, whatever they say, must be right, and you daren't criticize them at all. And you can see the great danger in that. So which is why I say that if there's any criticisms you have about this Buddhist society, go and tell them to the president. You can leave me alone. That's what he's there for. No, you can come and tell me as well. But at least, you know, if I am worth anything as a teacher, it's not just what you say, but what you do and how you react. And sometimes criticism is a great way of finding how enlightened you are or how enlightened you aren't, which is more to the point. Which is why it has always been sort of a tradition. If somebody ever claims to be enlightened, we always try and criticize them. What, you stupid idiot, you can't be enlightened. And we try on purpose to make them angry. And if we get them angry, we say, ha ha, you're not enlightened. There we go. We do that out of compassion. But the point is, why is it when you receive criticism, what actually happens to your mind, and why does it suffer so much? And there's many reasons there. But first of all, it needs to understand that where criticism comes from. Much of criticism in our world is not what we usually call constructive criticism. It's not really trying to make things better, but it's used as a weapon to hurt somebody. And we all know that type of criticism. Now, they don't know what they're talking about, but nevertheless, they sort of put you down, call you stupid names, sort of describe something which you've done which was actually quite good as being absolutely ridiculous and stupid. They criticize you, put you down, blame you for things you haven't done. Why do they do that? It's quite clear to me, you know, having had a little bit of mindfulness. Mindfulness is when you investigate the nature of reality. You don't just react, you see what's going on and why is it happening. You investigate. And that's one of the parts of mindfulness. It was quite clear to me that the reason why many people criticize you is because they want to upset you. They want to hurt you psychologically or emotionally. That's why people call you, you stupid idiot, or you lazy monk, you good for nothing brown robe bludger. Go and get a proper job. I remember one of the great criticisms I once saw when I was walking, when I was only a young monk, when I was walking with this very senior monk of our tradition, Ajahn Sumedho, and he must have been in his like mid-40s or early 50s at this time. And we were walking in this North English town and somebody came up to us, this gentleman on his way to work in a nice suit. And he left me alone because I was still a very young monk. But he came up to this monk, Ajahn Sumedho, looked him up and down and said, "You are old enough to know better." It's a great put down. So when people criticize you, what are they doing that for? Obviously you're challenging them, their lifestyle, because you're a monk, someone who's given up the world. And obviously Ajahn Sumedho wasn't doing this like as a young person just going through a fad. It was obviously there for a long time as a mature individual, but still you get criticism. And why do people get that? It's either stupidity from their part, but a lot of times the reason why people criticize others is nothing to do with what you're doing. It's not your behavior, your actions, the way you look is the cause of the criticism. People criticize others because they are having a hard time. A lot of criticism comes from the suffering in the heart of the one from whose mouth those words come. I've seen that so often, that people who have had a difficult time, who are stressed out, who are lonely, who haven't got much meaning in their life, who are suffering either physically or mentally, they're the ones who criticize the most. It's as if that they feel pain. And they don't want anybody else to feel happy. It's a strange thing, but it's a response of many human beings in this world. If I hurt, I want other people to hurt. That's how they think. If I'm in a bad mood, you kick the dog. Poor dog. What has a dog done? But nevertheless, in your bad mood, this is what we do. So first of all, when you are the butt of criticism, realize where it's coming from. That other person is suffering. Suffering probably much more than you. So if somebody comes and sneers at you and calls you a stupid idiot, go and give them a hug. Say, "Oh, you poor thing." "Oh, you must really have had a hard day today." Especially if that's your wife or husband. Maybe if it's a person on the street, I wouldn't recommend that procedure. But if if it's someone who you love, who's careful, who you live with, a lot of times their criticism is not anything to do with you, but it's expressing in a strange way how they feel. They're saying, "I feel terrible, something happened to me today, I feel bad. Please understand." Because why is it that we usually criticize those people we love the most? Why is it we take it out, as they say, on the people who we live with, who we care for? Really, it's because deep down we hope that at least they will understand that our words have nothing to do with our partner. They're mostly concerned with how we feel. So when we do receive criticism, realize that person must be in a terrible state of mind to say such terrible words. They must be really suffering. Because if you are happy, if you are at peace, you find you can't criticize anybody. If you are having a good time, if you have just fallen in love or won the lottery or your football team is winning, then you can't criticize anybody. But if your football team lose, the whole world, you blast everybody. This is the nature of the mind. So first of all, understand where criticism comes from. And that doesn't make it personal. The reason why the criticism hurts us as individuals is because when somebody says we're stupid or we're ugly, we take it personally. If anyone says that you are ugly, you should ask them, what part of me? My feet? My hands? If they say your face, that's only a portion of me. You haven't seen the rest of me yet. So why take it personally? And anyway, that's not really you. You can always get a facelift. It's amazing what you can do these days. You don't have to always be ugly. And anyway, in Buddhism, we have this wonderful saying that beauty in Buddhism has nothing to do with the fineness of your features. Beauty in Buddhism is your virtue, your goodness, your kindness, your compassion. That's what we call beauty in Buddhism. So you don't have to spend a lot of money to become beautiful in our tradition. All you need to do is come here on a Friday night. This is why we call this Ajahn Brahm's Beauty Parlor. And there's something true in that, because when you become a kind, good person, like many were laughing then, it was wonderful to look at you when you're laughing. You actually do become more beautiful, more attractive people. Isn't it the case when a person is happy and good, we like to be with them, we like to look at them, we like to speak with them, we like to go out with them. Goodness, virtue, kindness, compassion, that is something which really does make you beautiful. So that's true, this is where beauty comes from. But anyway, that's just going off on a tangent. If somebody does call you ugly, or does call you stupid, the reason why we do get upset, the reason why it hurts us, is because we think they may be right. That's the reason. And sometimes we haven't got a clue who we are or what we're doing or why we did it. Sometimes we're so busy or so unaware of our actions or why we do these things that we're not quite sure what we did or why we did it. And sometimes we take what other people to say as the truth. We believe them. We think, yeah, I must be ugly. That's why people, if they call you ugly, you go back to your room and you have to look in the mirror and say, well, where is it ugly? You actually believe them. Or you think someone calls you stupid and you believe them again. That is one of the main reasons why people get upset at criticism. Because we take other people's words and give them too much validity and too much value. First of all, we should use our reason. How can anybody really understand what you did and why you did it? People can't judge you. If you look deeply, some of the things, reasons I say things, the mistakes which I make, so the stupid things which I say sometimes. Why did I say those things? Sounds like just you were tired, or you're in a bad mood, or you're sick. One of these monks I grew up with, he had a bad temper, and I only found out afterwards when he revealed to me just he had these terrible migraines. And sometimes when I found out how terrible the migraines were, I thought, my goodness, if I was suffering that pain, I would have been grumpy as well. So sometimes when someone is critical of you, maybe it's not you, it's because where they're coming from. So don't believe what they say. The standard teaching in Buddhism was summed up by my teacher Ajahn Chah, who had this knack of saying these one-liners, which many of you have heard before, but it fits into this talk now. He said these one-liners which made it so easy to remember and which made it very helpful to keep in mind in your daily life. He said, if someone ever calls you a dog, which in that part of Thailand where I grew up was something we call fighting language. If you call someone a dog, the bad word for a dog, like a cur or a mongrel, someone called you a mongrel, that would always start a fight. He said, if anyone calls you a dog, he said, this is what you should do. Look at your bottom to see if you have a tail. And if you haven't got a tail, you're not a dog. End of problem. Now that's a wonderful saying, and it's very practical and helpful. Sometimes you can go to sort of talks and get all this theory which sounds just so profound, but which is completely useless in your daily life. Now that's a piece of wisdom which you will find incredibly useful in your daily life. When anyone calls you a dog, please look at your bottom. Have you got a tail or not? The meaning of that is if they criticize you, you don't just deny it and say, no, it didn't do it, it's not me. Have a look, first of all. Do you deserve that criticism? Are you doing something wrong? Are you being a lazy monk? And if you are, be honest about it. There's nothing wrong about making mistakes in life. Mistakes are allowed. That's how we learn. It's part of life. Let yourself make mistakes, and please let the people you live with make mistakes as well. Because it's only by making those mistakes can we grow and learn. And part of the idea of compassion and love is to be open enough, to be gentle enough, to allow other people to make mistakes, to be able to forgive them, to love them, not because they're perfect, but love them because they're growing to perfection. They haven't reached there yet, but we're there to be with them, help them along as they grow. And we understand that they're there for us as well, to help us grow, to learn from the mistakes we make in life. A true loving relationship gives that freedom. Not the freedom to be perfect, that's putting you in a prison, but the freedom to be yourself, to make mistakes and to grow. So if anyone does call you a dog, you've been behaving like a dog. Accept that. Go woof woof, thank you very much, yes you were right. The point is that there you can accept that criticism, you can learn from it, and of course that's the start of growth. One book I read a long time ago, it was a story of one man's emergence from mental illness. And the point of this story, the point which I remembered and which meant the most to me, was this fellow, he'd been committed into a home for the mentally ill. And throughout the whole time he was in this hospital, he thought that he was okay, there was some mistake made, that he didn't deserve to be here, that he was perfectly sane. He thought all the other people were mad, but not him. Until one day his best friend confronted him and told him, you're mad, you're crazy. And because it was his best friend, someone he'd grown up with and trusted, for once he actually took that criticism on board. He thought, maybe I am mad. Maybe my best friend's right. And that was the pivot point in his recovery from mental illness. From that time on, once he recognized the problem, his healing was assured. And he wrote a book about his path out of mental illness into a full and probably, you know, wiser than most person's life. But the point was, he accepted a criticism which was very, very hard to bear. The reason why we don't accept such criticism when it is true is because we've got such big egos. We've got our idea, our illusion of who we are, and that is what resists us being helped by other people. One of the reasons why in religions like Buddhism we try enormous methods, spiritual practices like meditation, to letting go of this ego, this sense of self, and lessening it. Allowing ourselves to be imperfect, allowing ourselves just to be who we are, allowing ourselves to change, to love ourselves as we are. As I say in that book, to open the door of your heart to yourself, no matter who you are, no matter what you've done. This idea of actually not compressing the self into some ideal image, but letting it be more fluid and imperfect, more human if you like. Because that lessens the sense of ego and self, which will resist, like an impregnable castle, any advice and criticism from others. It's all right to listen to others. You don't have to be perfect. And the wonderful people, the humble people, the beautiful people, are those that can listen to the criticism of others. See if it's deserving, and then if it is, to take it on board and grow from it. We can learn, we can become better people. But a lot of times the criticism has got no ground at all. Very often that people try and measure you, but they can't. Because I said, most of the criticism comes from other people's problems, not yours. And that's a time when one just has to, as they say, shrug it off and not worry about it. There is an old story which I haven't told for about 6 months, so it's time to recycle it again now. And it's a lovely story, the donkey in the well story. I think I told this last time at the Akatina ceremony in Bodhinyana, so it's been a while now. It's a beautiful story of how to deal with unfair criticism in life. Long time ago, a donkey was walking quite contentedly through the forest when absent-mindedly he fell into a well. He didn't injure himself, it was dry at the bottom, but a donkey can't climb out of wells. So there he was at the bottom of the well, wondering how on earth he can get out and escape. So he started shouting in the way donkeys do, like making a noise, hoping that someone would hear him and rescue him. Soon someone came. It was the local farmer. And when he looked down into the well and saw the donkey in the bottom, he thought, that old donkey, he's always been eating my grass, he's never any use for anything, he's just so stubborn. Now he's in the bottom, well, why should I help him? Actually, I've got a good idea. I've always wanted to get rid of that lazy donkey. And I've also wanted to fill that well in. Why don't I fill the well in with the donkey in the bottom? And so this very cruel and heartless farmer got a shovel and started shoveling dirt into this well on top of the donkey with the aim of burying the donkey alive. Now that donkey didn't know what was happening when all this earth was shoveled on top of him, but he soon figured it out. He was being buried alive, so his screams got even louder. But after a while, he became quiet. The farmer thought, the earth must be now above his head. That's why he shut up, the stupid donkey. I've killed him at last. And he carried on shoveling. But that's not what was happening, because the farmer couldn't see down the bottom of the well. What had happened after many shovels of earth had been put all over the donkey got some insight. Buddhist wisdom. He understood what needed to be done. The next time a shovel load of dirt was thrown on top of him, he just shrugged it off, trod it in under his feet, and he found himself 1 centimeter higher. Another shovel full of earth, shrug it off, tread it in, another centimeter closer to the top. Every shovel full of earth, shrug it off, tread it in, and closer to the top. And of course, being in the well, the farmer couldn't see this. And so, if the farmer was really looking, he would have seen the top of a pair of ears appear above the rim of the well. And even then, the whole ears. But before the farmer noticed, the donkey was close enough to the top, he could jump out. And according to the story, he bit the farmer in the backside and ran away. He'd escaped. And the moral of that story, as I hope you know, that sometimes criticism is like having a lot of dirt and other rotten stuff thrown on top of us, unfairly. And instead of allowing the criticism of others in life to bury us in gloom and anger and upset, instead, we should just shrug it off, tread it in, and we get higher and higher and higher. That's how we deal with the criticism of life. Remember, shrug it off, tread it in, and you become higher. You're growing. So we don't allow it to actually upset us or bury us. Because when you start to think about it, much criticism is, people aim is to try and upset us. Why do we allow other people to control our happiness? We have an idea, we have a tradition of individuality in our Western world, of like a freedom of ourselves to do and think what we want. And I employ that here, this independence of spirit, which is celebrated in Western cultures. And I say, why allow anybody else to control your happiness, especially with criticism? And that saying is one thing which I allow to run my life. If someone says the most rotten words about me, I'm not going to allow that to spoil my day. Why should I allow them to make me unhappy? Why should I allow my husband to upset me? Why should I allow my wife to spoil my day? Why should I allow my boss to disturb my work by calling me lazy or stupid or an idiot or whatever? It's amazing that when you don't allow other people to control your happiness, you can take their criticism, look at it, do I deserve it, do I not deserve it, let it go, learn from it, but you don't become unhappy as a result. If they've got it right, oh, thank you so much, you pointed out a mistake in my character. If they got it wrong, you got it wrong, end of story. That way, when you don't allow other people to control your happiness, what happens is that people don't criticize you in the same old ways. It's like criticizing a rock. It's like shouting at a mountain. When people see that, they get very inspired. One of my friends, he was a monk with me when I was young, and he was actually one of the first monks at our monastery in Serpentine many years ago. He disrobed and now lives in Melbourne somewhere. I remember asking him, why did you first become a Buddhist? What inspired you with these teachings? He told me the following story, that many, many years ago, it must be about 25, almost 30 years ago, he went to a public talk in a library auditorium somewhere in Melbourne. It was a Buddhist talk by this monk, the Tibetan monk, I think it was. This Tibetan monk was introduced, and he started to speak, just like I'm speaking now. But when he started to speak, someone in the back stood up and called him an evil, a disciple of Satan. It was a born-again Christian who had come to witness to this monk's evil ways. And when the people in the audience, they were patient for 5 minutes, they said, please, sir, sit down and be quiet. We've come to listen to the monk, not you. That just encouraged this man even more, and he started ranting and raving about his religion and how evil this monk was. And that made people in the audience angry, and there was an argument, people shouting at each other. In the end, it took about 40-50 minutes to drag this man out. They had only hired the hall for 1 hour. So when silence was restored, this monk had about 5 minutes to talk about Buddhism. He couldn't say very much, but this one man in the audience was so inspired, not by what the monk said, but what the monk didn't say. Through all those 45 minutes, he was being sneered at, harangued, criticized, slandered, put down. Throughout that whole time, the monk was just sitting there peacefully smiling. He wasn't allowing that ranting man to spoil his peace and happiness. When he saw that, he realized that's how you deal with criticism. What an inspiring example that is. It can be done. So if that's how one person can deal with criticism, for 45 minutes, being called evil, an agent of the devil, whatever it is, whatever unkind, unfair, harsh, biting, slanderous words, if you just sit there peacefully, smiling, not allowing other people to control your happiness, that is a sign of a wise and compassionate person. That's what inspired him eventually to become a monk. So sometimes it's not what you say, but what you do, which shows the strength of your mind. You can do that too, but once you do that a few times, other people know it's a waste of time criticizing that person. It's a waste of time shouting at them. You're just wasting your breath. What a wonderful thing it is. One of the other stories, I don't know the last time I told this, but it fits in. One of the other lovely stories was about this Franciscan monk who was criticized by his superior, because this is what happened. He was a very, very kind and generous monk from the Franciscan tradition in the time of St. Francis, I believe, in the 13th century of the Common Era. And one day he was going on alms round, just like our Buddhist monks do. We go on alms round every Saturday, not just here in Nolimara, but also down in Armidale and in Serpentine as well. It's wonderful actually to repeat these ancient traditions which you will see in Thailand, Sri Lanka, Burma, these monks in the morning going with their alms bowls. We've been starting doing this in the town of Armidale every Saturday morning, or every other Saturday morning. It's beautiful to see. And just Westerners, they come running out giving all sorts of stuff. People are generous, they're kind. And it's wonderful to have a reason to be kind. But anyway, Franciscan was going on his alms round. And this man just said, look, I am more poor than you. Can you give me something? Can I have some money? And this Franciscan said, I don't have any money. I'm just begging for food myself. And this poor man said, but I'm so poor, I've got nothing. And this Franciscan said, all I've got is my robe. And the poor man said, that'll do. So, you know, holy people, like monks, we're supposed to be kind and compassionate. And there was a person who had nothing at all. So the monk, out of great generosity, naturally just practicing what he preached to others, he gave him his robe. But that's all he had. Those people who wonder, what do monks wear underneath their robes? The answer is nothing. There's nothing under there. So this poor monk was absolutely naked. And when he got back to his monastery, he tried to get in and say, get out of here, we don't allow crazy people in here. He said, I'm not a crazy person, I'm one of the monks. No, you're not, you're crazy, going around naked. Who do you think you are? We don't even allow perverts into our monastery. He said, I'm a monk, don't you remember me? I'm father this, or well, brother that, or whatever. And they recognized him. Oh, it's you. What happened? Did you get robbed? Did you get attacked? He said, no, this poor man, I saw this incredibly poor man. He needed the robe more than I did, so I gave it to him. And how can you argue with that? So the monk thought, oh, well, you know, you're a real monk, a really good monk. You know, even though that happened to you, you know, we can understand, you're really compassionate. So they took him to the storeroom, gave him a new robe. Now the trouble is, even with poor people, they've got their own grapevine. The word went around that this monk was a soft touch. So the next day he went out, someone else, oh, I'm so poor, I've got nothing. I've got nothing too, said the monk. Oh, you got your robe, that'll do. So he gave him the robe a second time. He came back to the monastery a second time naked. Here he comes again. So they recognize him this time, let him in and gave him another robe. But when it happened a third time, when someone asked a third time for his robe, he gave it away a third time and he came back, that was it, he had to go to the abbot's office. Look, you've been taken advantage of, we've only got so many robes in the storeroom, you can't keep on giving away all of our robes every day, we'll all be naked if you carry on like this. And the abbot gave him a real scolding, really criticized him heavily. And all the time, this monk just put his head down. He didn't even try to defend himself against the criticism. He just waited for the abbot to finish. And the abbot really let him have it. Half an hour or an hour, I don't know how long it took. When the abbot really thought, you know, he'd actually taught this monk a lesson. Because that's why people actually do scold and criticize. If you criticize your children, you want to make sure they learn the lesson. And so it took a whole hour. And after the abbot thought the monk had learned the lesson, he sent him away. Half an hour later, the abbot was knocking on the abbot's door with a cup of hot soup. And the abbot said, "What are you giving me this cup of hot soup for?" And the monk said, "Well, you were shouting at me for so long, I think you must have a sore throat. So this is for your sore throat." And the point was, he wasn't being sarcastic, he really meant it. All the time he was being scolded, all this monk was thinking, "Oh, the poor abbot. You know, he must be sort of getting really sore throat by now." And so as soon as he was released, he didn't think about himself and how he'd been abused unfairly. He just made a cup of hot soup for his abbot. So the moral of that story, if it's your husband kept shouting at you, "Yeah, yeah, 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 yeah," just go make him some hot soup. So, dear husband, this is for your sore throat. That's a wonderful story. I like that story because that's like a monk story. If someone shouts at you, just get them a cup of hot tea or get a hot soup or something. Not to throw over their head, but to make sure they get a nice relief for their sore throat. So in other words, you don't allow criticism to control you. You have some compassion, and so you can actually help the other person rather than getting upset about it. And so when we understand criticism that way, criticism is never something which upsets us. It becomes a positive thing. We can actually learn something from this. And we can actually learn some tolerance about criticism. One of the things which I found upsetting is that people become so intolerant to criticism these days. You can't say anything to anybody without them getting upset and suing you. Or doing something even worse. Or blowing you up. That's why I'm a bit concerned sometimes, you know, to tell any Muslim jokes. Or I know a few, but I better not tell them on the internet. I'll tell you in private afterwards. But sometimes criticism is important, because in criticism we can have an argument together as friends. Again, one of the beautiful developments which I've been part of over the last, I don't know, maybe 10 years, is as well as actually being working very, very hard, sort of teaching Buddhism and meditation, not just in Australia, but throughout the world, we've got this wonderful relationship with the only other monastery in sort of Western Australia, the Benedictine community at New Norcia. And we really are good friends. One of our monks was just passing through about a year ago with a friend. And so as soon as the monks saw him, the Benedictine Catholic monks, "Oh, you're one of the monks from, you know, Serpentine." And they invited him in to stay the night there. Because we know each other so well, the Benedictine monks come to our monastery at Serpentine once a year for an afternoon. We go to their monastery once a year for an afternoon. I think it was August or September, we had the two abbots talk all day at New Norcia, myself and Abbot Placid of the Benedictine community talking together. It was very impressive. I think it was about next Thursday, next Thursday I'm going to Church of Christ with one of their monks. Church of Christ, I think it's in Dianella. And one of the monks from New Norcia and myself are just talking at spirituality in a Church of Christ. They're Catholic, a Buddhist, in a Church of Christ church, talking about spirituality. It's wonderful to be able to do things like that, to actually to explore together. But the reason I'm telling about this relationship we've been developing over many, many years with the Benedictine monks of New Norcia, who are Catholics and we're Buddhists, is that we've got so friendly that now we can criticize each other. That's actually a sign of trust. We don't need just to try so hard not to offend each other, as you do when you make friends for the first time. But now we can actually start to some of the hard questions, where we disagree, where we differ. And I found that one of the best parts of that relationship, we can be critical in a sort of in the context of almost like a mutual admiration society, where we respect each other enough to know that whatever criticism is given It's in the context of such friendship that will never ever destroy what we built up over so many years. And you find that if the criticism is based on this mutual trust and respect, we can have this positive way of pointing out differences, even mistakes of each other, and it doesn't affect our relationship at all. In fact, it enhances that relationship. When a husband and wife can be so trusting in their mutual respect and love for each other, they can criticize. We realize it's coming from the right place. Not because we want to hurt the other person. We really want the relationship to get even better. It's not done out of ill will or out of selfishness or out of pride. It's done out of real compassion. Because sometimes we have to do that. As an abbot of a monastery teaching other monks, sometimes you do need to take a monk aside and just to say, well, look, you know, you're not doing it right, do it this way. But I try and do that only after we put it in the context of mutual respect, goodwill, that the motive really is compassion. And it's amazing what you can receive when you know that other person is criticizing you from such a beautiful, wonderful place. Some of the things which my teacher Ajahn Chah would say to us monks, the way he would deal with us, sometimes I wondered, how on earth would you take that? You wouldn't take that from any other person. Some of the criticism was actually really quite deep. You'd only take that because there was something about that teacher. You realize he really did have your best interest at heart. You understood at a very profound level he really did love you and he cared for you absolutely. And that's why he would criticize you. And you would take it. And you would never get upset. It's a wonderful thing to have built up such a relationship of trust and love and confidence in each other that you could accept criticism. Hopefully, that can happen in our society more and more. When we realize that criticism is actually coming from a good place and it's very necessary, we need to get some feedback. But the feedback is always coming in the context of something much greater. I often compare the way that we can sometimes criticize each other at a monastery, or we can actually criticize each other with the Benedictine monks and the Buddhist monks about our different lifestyles. Sometimes I compare that to when I was a young man, I'd go with my friends to the pub. We'd have a few beers and we'd argue with each other. Sometimes have these really bitter arguments about little things. But then afterwards, we say, okay, enough now, my turn to buy the drinks. We'd always end with this beautiful friendship because we know that the context of that argument, I'm not sort of saying you should go to the pub and argue, this is when I was, before I was a Buddhist, okay. I've got to be very careful, someone criticized me, Ajahn Brahm, you're telling people to go to the pub and argue, breaking your precepts. But this was actually an ordinary life. You could have these arguments, you know, in a social gathering, and because it was with your friends, you knew there was something more than that argument, the friendship was greater, and the friendship was so strong, it allowed that argument without in any way affecting your friendship. That degree of friendship, that degree of respect, I think that is what will allow mutual criticisms. And we won't really think that criticism is so terrible and so bad. I have to defend myself. I have to get my own back. I have to fight back. I point to this because sometimes we have like the effect of those Muslim cartoons. We have other religions being smeared or slandered or criticized. And sometimes there is terrible backlashes. And sometimes you wonder, how can we solve this problem? We can't just be so soft we don't give any criticism to any religion or any race or any gender. Because sometimes criticism is important. We can't be that sensitive. We never say anything in case we might hurt somebody. But then again, how can we get to that point? We're like friends. We can point out maybe errors, possible mistakes, ways that we can become better people. How can we get to that place where Buddhists can tell a Muslim, maybe you shouldn't do that, without anger being generated? Or a born-again Christian could tell a Buddhist, no, don't do it that way, you're doing it wrong. How can we listen to each other without getting upset, to be able to take that criticism in a positive way? I think the point is we have to develop that mutual respect and friendship first of all. That's also how you can take the criticism in a relationship. Boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife, gay people, whatever section of society you're in, we're always going to receive some degree of criticism. And we're going to give criticism as well. And if it's done from the right place, it is very, very positive. How do we get to that right place? Confidence, respect. Say confidence, because that's one area which I haven't actually mentioned. When I said earlier, I skirted it. When I said earlier, if somebody calls you an idiot or someone calls you foolish or ugly, the only reason why you get upset is you believe they may be right. When you're confident of who you are, you know who you are and why you do things. And what somebody else says, it doesn't really affect you so much. If they call you stupid or idiotic or they call you evil or if they call you whatever, please excuse me, it's very hard for me to come across a litany of negative words because basically I don't use them all that often. Certainly not sort of hard words which people say to each other. But if you have that confidence, you know exactly who you are and what you're doing, then of course those words, they don't affect you at all. Whether one is in a gay community, whether one is in a minority religious community or a minority racial community. Once you have confidence, you know who you are, you respect your race, your religion, your gender, your sexual orientation. When you respect that and you're confident in it, you find what other people say doesn't really matter. You know what you're doing and why you're doing it. And other people's criticism just doesn't hardly matter at all. Except when they get it right and say, oh yeah, I can become a better gay this way. I can become a better sort of Aboriginal or whatever. I think this is how criticism can actually be productive. So to sum it up, whenever we receive criticism, remember that most of it comes from the negativity of other people. They're hurting, so don't take it seriously. It's their problem, not yours. Don't allow criticism to control your happiness. If someone calls you a dog, look at your bottom to see if you have got a tail. It might be right. Most of the time it isn't, so let it go. If you can develop this beautiful friendship and this trust in each other, build it up over the years so you respect each other, realize that no one's in here to harm you. We're all here to sort of grow together so we can listen to each other. We can get to that stage where we can accept criticism, we can hear criticism, and it doesn't affect our relationships. It doesn't destroy this, you know, sense of me inside of me, you know, which wants to be loved or cared for. We have that already. So we can accept these little criticism, these little barbs, because they're positive, just like the monks at my monastery and the monks at New Norcia. And that way we can understand the meaning of criticism in this world. We don't avoid criticism at all costs, which I find that happening more and more in our society. But we also know how to deal with criticism so it doesn't lead to wars and violence and the enmity and separations between people. Criticism is important in our world. We need to do that. It needs to be done in the right way. If we can do that in the right way, from a sense of friendship and understanding, I think we can make a better world. We could also understand when we're criticized, how to deal with that. And that way we can lessen the suffering in this world. we can get greater progress to make a better world for ourselves and for our kids. That's how to deal with criticism. There ends the talk. Now, are there any criticisms about today's talk? Any comments or feedback? Let's call it feedback. Any feedback about the talk, about criticisms? Any feedback anyone saw what I wrote in the... Oh, yes, one in the back, yeah. In the paper? Yeah, thank you for that question. Just for the sake of the MP3 audio, you were saying that that monk in that story who was harassed verbally by the born-again Christian for 45 minutes, he was protected. The other people in the audience, who were obviously supportive, were arguing against the born-again Christian. Would he have been able to survive if he was just by himself? And I'm sure that, well, not sure, but confident that he probably would have been able to survive. Because you can do that in public, usually in private it's much easier. It's in public when your ego is challenged that people get the most reactive. If it's in private, it's not so bad. However, that certainly I've been harangued and harassed in my life as a monk, especially in the early years as a monk here in Western Australia. So it's not that hard to do with a positive training in life. And I think it's maybe the training which we have in Buddhism to say, you know, basically just if you give violence to violence or anger to anger, just the anger just keeps on going. So I think it's because that Buddhism has never justified violence either in body or by speech. Never ever. There's never reason for it. No justification at all. I think because of that it's always encouraged us to say, well, there must be another way. I think we trained ourselves. You know, to have less ego, less sense of self, more compassion for the other. And just like that Franciscan monk, not thinking about, you know, why is he saying this to me? Just thinking about that poor Christian must have a very sore throat. I do hope that someone offered him a cup of soup as they led him out. I think he would have done that, but of course you never know. But he did it on that occasion, and that's just like an inspiration. That's why he got inspired by Buddhism, not because of the theory, because he saw it working. Wonderful, wonderful thing to do, to be harassed, but to be peaceful. Does that answer your question, sir?
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions while we're still here? No? Yeah, go on. Yeah, come on, Eddie. Brave article. Oh yeah, that was actually maybe it's that's you're praising me for a little article in the West Australian where because I saw another article and it was pointed out to me that there was quite a severe deprecation of gay lifestyles, and I decided that that's never been in Buddhism before, and so I wanted just to set the record straight. That you can be a Buddhist and a gay, you are welcome, there's no discrimination whatsoever. And the main thing I would say in the article was that it doesn't matter whether you're gay or whether you are heterosexual or whether you're celibate like us monks. It's how you do this is the most important. It's how you're gay. It's how you're heterosexual. It's how you're celibate. And one is not superior than the other. When the Buddha said the third precept, this is for those people who still have doubts, The third precept, misconduct in sexuality. It's nothing to do with gay, heterosexuals or celibate. It's whether you're harming someone else or harming yourself. And it's very clear to me. I was a heterosexual before I was a monk. So homosexuality is something very strange to me, because I haven't got the personal experience. But now as a teacher, there's many of my friends are gay, and they're great friends. It's great to have them as friends. I value them immensely. And because of that, I've learnt over the years, just my mistake, which is the conditioning I had as a youth. And because of that these days, it doesn't matter what sexual orientation you are. You know, that love, compassion goes to all beings. It's not who you are, not what race, not what gender, not what age, not even what religion you are. As long as you're a good person, you're kind, you're compassionate, you're generous. That's all we see. Whether you are white, black, yellow, striped, homosexual, heterosexual, celibate, or somewhere in between, I don't care. It's how you do it is important. And that's actually the basic of ethics. So I just mentioned that in the article. It needed to be said. So I wasn't being brave. I enjoyed doing that. Well, thank you, Eddie, anyway, for that positive criticism. Yeah. Okay, I think that's probably enough now, is it? Yeah. Anyone else going? No, okay. If you have any more things to say, you can always come up afterwards and have a chat. Okay, pay respects to Buddha Dhamma Sangha now.
Patipano Bhagavato Sahuaka Sango Sanghaya.